As I said at the beginning, this is a special day for us because it's a coming together of two very important events. One is the Pentecost, and the other is a baptism. Now, I have to confess that as soon as I saw that they were coming together, I was excited. But then I thought, you know what? How many Pentecost celebrations have we had? Over 2,000 years of them. How many baptisms have we had? Well, really, hundreds of millions. Well, I don't know about you, but when I do something, say, 2,000 times, it kind of loses its effect, right? I mean, at least on me. Am I alone in this? I don't know if you do things 2,000 times, but I sure do. Whenever I do things 2,000 times, I kind of lose interest. So the question is, how do we take Pentecost seriously 2,000 years later? How can it mean anything to us when it's just a kind of repetition year after year after? We even read the same lessons year after year on Pentecost. Well, the fact that we have an additional bit of joy because Jack is here, that adds a little more interest and a little more excitement. Maybe there is something we can get here. But honestly, how many of you are baptized? Most of you? All of you? I am. Just being baptized, did that transform me in some particular way? You know, I was hoping that I would learn how to fly before I died. I can't fly. Lee can fly, but he uses a plane. You know, all the kinds of things that I would like to do, I haven't been able to do and can't do. And just being baptized, what does it mean? How is it important? Why is it important? As I struggled with these questions, lo and behold, I turned on the internet yesterday morning to watch the nuptials of the royal couple. Now, I think I mentioned last week that we knew that the person who was asked to preach at this very British event was none other than our own Bishop Michael Curry from the United States. He's our presiding bishop, and he was asked by Meghan to be the official preacher at the castle where they were wed. Now, I don't know if I can really dramatize how significant this is. Let me just give you one example. It was about a year ago that the Anglican Communion, that is all the Anglican churches around the world, which includes the Episcopal Church here in the United States, the Anglican churches around the world got together and had a big conversation about the issue of marriage equality. Why? Because the Episcopal Church in the United States said, what's the big deal? What matters is love. That didn't sit well with the rest of the Anglican Communion, and they punished us. I don't know if you remember a year and a half ago, we were censored and not allowed to vote at the last gathering. And the person who took the brunt of that was none other than our Bishop Michael Curry. So how cool is it that when Meghan and Harry, the prince, get married, they make sure that the person who preaches the sermon, this is the centerpiece of the service now, the person who preaches the sermon is, in fact, the one who a year ago was told to beat it and keep your mouth shut. That's one part that makes me kind of excited, and I'm really glad that we have a bishop with courage. The other is that this man is the great-grandson of slaves. Our bishop, our presiding bishop, is the great-grandson of slaves. And much of the slave movement began where? You guessed it, in England. Much of the wealth that came into the colonies and that came into Great Britain were in fact wealth that was taken from other people and on the backs of slaves. So it was really quite interesting to see this grandson of slaves up there preaching in the chapel, the Queen's Chapel. As I listened to Michael Curry, I thought, that he's got the answer to the question that I'm looking for. What is the significance? What makes baptism important? Why should we be doing it every year? What's Pentecost all about? Is just how do we avoid it from becoming an empty ritual? Certainly for clergy, you know, for clergy, it can become really boring after a while, and we kind of lose our affection for it. And we forget what is really going on. And we can just kind of go through the motions. Well, I don't like going through the motions. I think you know that. I can't stand just going through the motions. But I couldn't get a hold of this question. How do we make sense of a rite that's 2,000 years old today? How does it make sense for Jack, who has sought, in fact, to be baptized, sought to be part of this community? How do we keep it from becoming just a boring thing for you? Not today, perhaps, but 5 years from now. What is the significance of this? And as I listened to Michael Curry preach in the UK yesterday, I heard the answer. And I'm going to contravene my good wife's usually good judgment and read to you a good section of this sermon because it speaks so directly. And Christine is worried. She says, you know, they're going to think you're lazy. Well, maybe. I don't know. Here we go. This is the sermon, just selections from the sermon that Michael Curry gave. The late Dr. Martin Luther King once said, and I quote, "We must discover the power of love, redemptive power of love. And when we do that, we will make of this old world a new world." Here's the key. And for love, love is the only way. The New Testament says it this way, "Beloved, let us love one another because love is of God. And those who love are born of God and know God. Those who do not love do not know God." Why? Because God is love. Jesus of Nazareth on one occasion was asked by a lawyer to sum up the essence of the teachings of Moses. Now, this is a very ancient tradition among rabbis. Rabbis will meet and they'll confab and they will challenge each other to kind of intellectual duels. And oftentimes one rabbi will ask another rabbi, "What is the essence of another rabbi's teaching?" And so they go back and forth on this. And this is one of those occasions where Jesus, being a rabbi, gets asked the question, "What's the essence of the teaching of Moses?" Now, we have to remember what the teaching of Moses is. That is, Moses went up on Mount Sinai and received the tablets of the law, the Torah, and this was to become the source of all the legal institutions of Israel and even the cultural institutions of Israel. What is the essence of the teaching of Moses? What's the essence of the Torah? The Torah is huge. It's, you know, what is it, 27 books? Including the prophets. How do you get the essence? And Jesus stops and he thinks, and he goes back in his mind to the most ancient of the Hebrew scriptures. And he quotes Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And Jesus says, as quoting them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. This is the first and greatest commandment." But there's another one that's just like it. It goes like this: "Love your neighbor as yourself. And by the way, while you're at it, love yourself. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. This is the first and greatest commandment. And there is one just like it." I'm repeating it because it's so important. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then in Matthew's version, he adds, "On these two, love of God and love of neighbor, hang the entire law. All the prophets, everything that Moses wrote, everything in the scriptures, everything that God has been trying to tell the world can be summed up in just these two lines. Love God, love your neighbors." Now Bishop Curry goes on and he asks us to think and imagine a world where love is the way. Imagine our homes and families when love is the way. Imagine neighborhoods and communities where love is the way. Imagine governments and nations where love is the way. Imagine business and commerce when love is the way. Imagine this tired old world when love is the way. When love is the way, unselfish, sacrificial, redemptive, when love is the way, then no child, when love is the way, no child will ever go to bed hungry ever again. When love is the way, poverty will become history. I'm told that Jack has a special love for nature, that he cares for the earth. Well, when love is the way, the earth will be more than just a resource pit that we drain for our own goods and then throw everything away. When love is the way, earth will not be a resource pit, but will be a sanctuary. When love is the way, we will lay down our swords and shields down by the riverside to study war no more. When love is the way, there is plenty good room for all God's children. Plenty good room for all God's children. This is the faith in which we baptize. This is the dream we have, the imagination we think. What would it mean if love really guarded and guided our lives? What would it mean to the world if we really understood and took love seriously, not just as a kind of gooey sentimental act, but rather as the voice of reality that cuts right through all of the lies of our century? When love defines who we are and how we understand, when love is the most important thing we can think of, and we can't even imagine talking about love without talking about loving God, and God loving us unconditionally, and how can we talk about love without talking about loving our neighbor? How can we come into church week after week, year after year, for 2,000 years and repeat these words, love, 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 and not let it transform our own lives so that we become the agents of change in the world, not just a kind of vague love, but a love that transforms us. We become the vector of God's love into the world, making it a place where all future children will love to live. When love is the way, we actually will treat each other well, treat each other like we're family. When love is the way, we know that God is the source of us all, and we are brothers and sisters, children of God. We are, all of us, brothers and sisters. That's who we are. There's plenty good room in this land, in this space, for all of our brothers and sisters. Amen.